Hi, it's Dave. In this video, I chat with my friend Emmett Peppers, who I had on the show a few weeks ago. He's had an incredible year growing his portfolio to over $30 million. I'll link to the original conversation in the video description. However, in this video, I want to dive into details of a real-time trade that Emmett put on last week. He bet almost $3 million on a short-term option play where he could easily lose all of it. It's kind of crazy in some ways, but I wanted to know more details. I hope you enjoy this chat. All right, here we are joined by Emmett Peppers. In my last interview with Emmett, we talked about how he went from about $1 million last year in 2019, and he had a breakout year personally this year, having his portfolio go to over $30 million, probably closer to 40. And I wanted to bring Emmett on again to my show and talk about this trade that he's put on. And I wanted to kind of dive into the details. Last interview is kind of more of an overview kind of lots of different things. But this show, I want to kind of dive into one specific trade that Emmett is doing right now, dive into your psychology, dive into kind of your thesis, dive into the emotional part of it and some strategy. And just kind of, it's mostly a learning experience for me. I just want to learn what's going on in your head and how you approach things. I hope it'll be a learning experience for others. And so welcome, Emmett.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Yeah. So yeah, when we last talked, I think we mentioned how I was really looking forward to the S&P 500 inclusion event, and how that I thought would be a potentially huge opportunity, for Tesla shares to rise, you know, significantly. And, I guess just this past Monday night, is when they made their announcement. Sort of surprised. I think it caught a lot of people off guard, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, that was, I knew it was coming sometime, but like, I think most people just kind of given up for, you know, the expectation, you know, when, it was surprising. I mean, I gave like a live stream and I was just like, wow, this is like amazing. Tesla has finally, you know, made the S&P 500. They've been finally, recognized, you know, and, accepted as one of the large cap companies. It's just like, it seems like an era is over, you know, with Tesla. Mm-hmm. Kind of the early stages, the struggling stages of this like scrappy startup, has transitioned into this now kind of mega cap company. And it seems like maybe the transition is almost like fully, you know, complete in a sense with the whole S&P 500, you know, this year. So I was curious about this trade. So I remember we were chatting over this past week and you're like, after the inclusion announcement, you're like, whoa, this is crazy. And you're really bullish personally on what the stock price could do. So you went ahead and you're saying how I remember that night before the market opened, you're like, hey, I think I might make a trade. So what was going on kind of through your head, you know, right after the inclusion and that evening?
Yeah. So naturally you and I are a huge Tesla bull. So I knew I'd be naturally super excited anyway. So I'm trying to like be conscious of that and counter that with realism, you know, like realistic thinking, not being overly optimistic. But even having that mindset, I still felt like the way the S&P announced it, even with the potential, you know, a month ahead of time and potentially over two different weeks and asking for investment advice from advisors, I felt that was a way to cover their own butt, cover their own ass in case the stock like goes up ridiculously high and people try to, you know, complain like, hey, you guys waited too long. You let this happen. Well, at least now they can cover their butts with, hey, we reached out to ask for advice even, and we did the best we could, you know? So I just felt like the S&P committee was almost giving information, a tell there that like, they even think this is going to create a potential squeeze in the stock, right? You know, they know this as well as anyone, I think. Also studying the potential S&P inclusion trade since this past summer or spring, or even before we started talking about it, I think, you know, for at least a year now, the possibilities, right? And so you just know there's, you know, 100 and something million shares that have to be bought by the index funds. You know, they have marching orders, especially to just like, okay, you have to buy 120 million shares or whatever the number is by this date. You know, you have no choice, you have to do it, right? And that's a lot of shares of Tesla, right? And that's like, I think $50 or $60 billion worth of Tesla. And I just don't think the liquidity is available. There's so many super bulls like me and you, and even institutional shareholders like Ron Barron. You know, we're not selling. ARK Investments, they're not selling a major piece of their position. You know, we're holding till trillions of dollars of market cap, or until all the best products are being released and robo-taxis and all that. So to me, it just seems like the opportunity for the stock to rise very, very significantly is there. And I was looking at the options, and you know, the night the S&P inclusion happened, I think the stock closed. Where did it close? It was like $400. And then after hours, it went up to 450, I think, right? Something
like
that. Yeah,
I think, somewhere around 400, and then after hours, it went up to 465, I think.
Yeah. So I was looking at the options prices, and I was thinking, okay, where do I think it could go by, you know, the end of the month of December? You know, that's, and I thought this thing could go to 1,000, like, you know, it might not, it's not probable, but I think like there's a 20 to 25% chance this thing's going to double, you know, or more potentially. And that's a big chance that that could happen in my mind. And so I looked at the 700, like for some reason, I looked at the 700 strike calls for January 15th of 2021. Those seem like a good pick that I could do the math on. And they closed that evening at $2.50 a contract. But I knew based on the delta, you know, there's all these options things that it would open between $5 and $10 per contract the next morning based on the $50 price increase and the increase in implied volatility, most likely. So I thought about, okay, if this thing's around $7 a contract, then the math I did was, okay, if the price goes to, you know, $800 or $900, then that's like a, you know, 10, 20, that's like a 20 plus return on my trade, 20X return. If I think it's a 20 or 25% chance of happening, then that's like a very irresponsible of me not to take that trade with some portion of my assets, not a lot of it. I don't want to risk, you know, a large portion of my money on a 20 to 25% chance. But if I can risk 5 or 10% of my assets on this, what I think is a 20% chance to get a 20X return, I would definitely do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of what I did. Mm-hmm. I just did the math and said, okay, I'm going to buy X number of contracts and execute them in the morning, just, in, you know, the next morning, Tuesday morning, the best way I can, because I wasn't sure if the price was going to keep going up or not right away, you know.
I'm wondering, so what do you think about the kind of a few things? First, there's that whole argument, and the S&P 500 actually put it in their press release, how Tesla is a very highly liquid stock, right? There's a lot of trading volumes. I think, you know, the average volume per day is like 50 million shares or something, right? So let's say hypothetically, there's 20 trading days left, let's say after when they announced around before it's included, then let's say, you know, people, institutions only need to buy 5 to 10 million shares per day, right? And they can fill the 120 or whatever million shares they're required to buy. So, you know, having buyers buy 5 to 10 million shares per day, you know, over 20 days, it seems, you know, it seems like a reasonable thing. Why would you think that buying just, let's say, 5 to 10 million shares out of 50 million, so let's say that's a 10 to 20% of institutions buying, why would you think that would cause a big spike? Is it because of, you think, the vast majority of those, that volume is just high frequency trading, algos is trading, there's not really that much real buying going on? Basically the thing?
That's my belief. I think the advent of high frequency trading over the last 10 or 20 years has changed that average trading volume to be sort of an unrealistic number. You know, it just, you don't know if 80% or 90% or 50% of that volume is just high frequency trades going back and forth with each other, you know, trying to trick real buyers and real sellers. So my guess with a stock like Tesla, which is probably the most speculated stock, you know, not just for the algos, but even day traders that are, you know, still around, I'm sure they're day trading the heck out of that thing. And those are people that are buying a stock and selling it in the same day. So their net position is zero going into the day, net position zero going out. I just think the average trading volume of Tesla, the true volume of actual net shares being bought and sold, is much, much lower than what that number shows. So That's just my feeling. As a, I've been in the business with, you know, interactive brokers looking at the back end of trades, you know, and, you know, they were sort of the inventor of high frequency trading, so to speak, way back when their market making division, Timber Hill, was started and such. So I think that's a big misnomer, you know, that people think, you know, they look at the those NASDAQ puts out their short report every 2 weeks and they're like, oh, it's only 2 days of hour, 3 days of trading volume or a day and a half of trading volume to close the shorts, right? And I think that's just a real misleading statistic.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so let's go a little bit deeper into this because I think it's actually quite interesting. So let's, like, back, what is it, a couple months ago when Tesla raised their $5 billion, like, you know, super fast. They announced their offering, or that they could sell their stock at any moment. And then within like a week, right, they said we finished, right, our trading. And so for $5 billion, let's say, you know, roughly 10 million shares or something, 10 million times, you know, $500, you know, whatever, 5 billion shares, a little bit less than that, but for the sake of, you know, this argument here. So they were able to sell 10 million shares within a week. And I guess we did see some weakness, right, when they announced it. But the stock didn't crash, you know, to the floor per se. I'm wondering, like, you know, can institutions really buy 10 million shares out of the 50 million that's there traded every day for 20 days, like, without, like, a huge run up? I mean, can it be just like ending up, you know, between $500 or $600, you know, stock at the end of that run up? Or, like, are you looking at it as like everyone's going to pile on, like everyone's going to, like, the traders and the you know, the funds and all these people are just going to, like, you know, ride it up, you know, make it harder for the institutions, right, to buy their required shares, and therefore you get this kind of exaggerated move up? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think what the first thing you said is more probable, but I think the run-up, there's a realistic possibility, whether it's, in my mind, 20 or 25%, somewhere in that range. You know, you have to flip a coin heads twice in a row to get that kind of outcome, right? So it's not probable, but the fact that it's a significant outcome like that, and it seems like you can get a 20x return, seems like a no-brainer to me to make that bet. Okay. You know, so that's how I thought of it.
Got it. So you're doing kind of a, in a way, a double bet, in my opinion. It's like, okay, first you're saying you think that there could be a run up because, and you're not saying the percentages are per se super high, you know, but you're saying that, you know, there's a good chance, let's say, I don't know what those possibilities are, but some type of run up. Maybe you're saying, oh, above 50%, this thing goes above $500 per, you know, per share, right?
Yeah.
And then you're saying there's another kind of bet you're making, which is, as it runs up, you're thinking it could do a super run up in a way. Like, it could really go past, you know, like 600, 700, up to 800 or something, right?
Like a massive short squeeze, but it's not a short squeeze. It's indexers forced to buy it. Yeah.
Got it. So you're betting on not just a run up, but a super run up, but you're saying that's still just like a 20% or so.
In my mind, I'm countering it. I really think it's like a 50% or 60 or 70, but that's just my overly optimistic bull Tesla nature, I think. So I'm trying to counter that and be conservative and say, okay, if I wasn't a Tesla bull and I'm just looking at, you know, the market and this, what I know about trading, or, you know, the fun, you know, the mechanics of supply and demand, that's basically what it is. And I'm going to put it at 20 or 25%.
Okay. You know? So here's another kind of angle or thing I want to ask you about. How about this whole run-up, though, that we've seen over the past year with Tesla? I mean, Tesla's done like a 10x already, right?
Yeah.
So when you're betting it, I mean, you're doing this interesting bet. You're saying, okay, it's the stock has run up 10 times over the past, you know, year and a half, and yet you still think there's a chance that it could even double, right? There's a 20% chance, whatever, from 400, right, let's say, to 800. Mm-hmm. Like, doesn't that run up, like a 10x going into this whole thing, kind of reduce the likelihood or the chances of a massive run up happening, because it's already kind of, perhaps people are still digesting, you know, this, the valuation change, right? They're still getting used to, acclimated, right, toward the idea of Tesla at $400 billion. So
absolutely.
Did you weigh that also into everything?
Yeah, I weighed that. And that's part of the reason why, again, I think it's more, it's not, you know, already over 50%. It's more like 20 or 25. But I do think the run-up in the Tesla was long overdue. You know, it was range-bound for so long. I felt artificially kind of suppressed. And it's finally, I feel like, just kind of caught up to a valuation it should have been on track for from the beginning. So I don't, I kind of discount the last run-up as like, okay, now we've sort of caught up to where we should be, you know? And I think this new event could put more of an Amazon-type psychology onto the Tesla stock. You know, Amazon stock was always insanely high, and people always wondered, that's ridiculous. Why is it so high? But it was part of the S&P, and people had to, you know, it was just one of those stocks that eventually has grown into its valuation somewhat, right? And so I think we're going to see something similar maybe with Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I wanted to do another angle here. So if the stock hypothetically, let's say it meets your 20%, whatever, you know, super breakout scenario here, and it goes up to 800. Like, we're talking about Tesla. I mean, that's like probably $750 billion market cap company. I mean, we're talking about Tesla. I mean, this was like a $50 billion market cap company, like, what, February or March of 2019, not too long ago, right? A little bit over a year. Yeah. And now you're making a bet that Tesla could be like a $750 billion market cap. I mean, isn't it kind of too early for that? I mean, like, wouldn't like there be a lot of people betting against the company, meaning the number of shorts would rise, people buying put options, just funds, like kind of betting the, let's say, the reverse. So let's say it goes up high and then people just, like, you know, bet against it, especially after, you know, December, you know, the
there'll still be people betting against it for sure. But on this type of scale, like, you need a lot of people betting against it to really change it now. You know, it's not a $4 billion company anymore where just like a few hedge funds, you know, could go short on it and manipulate, not manipulate, but put pressure on the stock price, right? Now it's $400 billion, right? Like, who's going to put billions of dollars on the line shorting Tesla? Like, these hedge funds, they might go short, you know, 1 or 2%. They usually have rules not to go more than like 5% of their book short, right? So, and even that seems like aggressive for Tesla given its history, right? So you might have some people like Chainos or someone, but I don't even think he manages all that much money anymore. He has a lot of followers or disciples, so to speak, but I don't think any of them manage that much money these days. So, I just don't think there's enough shorts out there to really put enough, any significant pressure. Like, it's so big now, it's just kind of a runaway train at this point. And the other thing with S&P 500 that's huge, that is sort of hard to define, is the closet indexers, or the index, the funds that benchmark themselves to the index and pretty much follow almost exactly what the index is doing. Maybe they weight a few things differently, but that's, you know, trillions of dollars of assets too. And now all of those managers, they have to decide, they have to look into Tesla and decide, are we going to go long 1% of Tesla too? Or are we going to, in fact, say no? And that's sort of like synthetically shorting it, sort of speaking, right? Because they're actively deciding not to buy Tesla when they're buying the rest of the index, right? So I don't think they want that kind of risk on their performance either. So they're not going to short it, but, you know, some percentage of them won't buy it, but I think that's going to be a small percentage. And so a lot of these benchmarked funds and portfolio managers are going to start buying 1% of Tesla too. And so that sort of plays into my mind on the super run up too. So it's just so much demand for Tesla stock and so little supply that I just don't, I see a real squeeze here possibility. And so I just, that's what I think. I mean, there's lots of people that have put more metrics and numbers on it on Twitter and in the Tesla Motors Club forums that I've read and you've read, and just makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, so supposedly like what it's like, 5.5, is it trillion?
Well, trillion. Yeah.
It's like, wait, I guess, worth of index funds, right? Are indexed to the S&P 500. And then you have like about 7 trillion or more that are benchmarked. So they have a little bit more flexibility, but how much do they really want to deviate, right, from the S&P 500?
And they haven't bought Tesla yet, right? Yeah. Most of those benchmarks, according to that Goldman Sachs survey that just came out, for example, they just surveyed like 90% of the 150 they surveyed that are benchmarked. They didn't own Tesla yet, right? So now you have those benchmark funds that have to actively decide. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. So, okay, here's another angle here. So what do you think about, like, you know, some of this stuff, like the more it is in a way anticipated in terms of, for example, S&P 500 inclusion for Tesla, like this has been anticipated all year by, you know, the investment community. Don't you think big money funds, S&P 500, all this stuff with all this, all these connections, things we don't know about as a retail investors, don't you think these people would have figured something out in terms of like something behind the scenes, like, you know, like to somehow, I want to say manipulate, but somehow control the stock price in some ways. Like, I noticed like sometimes with big stock offerings, like, these banks have, it seems like they have a way to somehow, you know, like control the stock price a bit, like make it less volatile, you know, during the stock offerings. And I'm just thinking like, hey, this is a highly anticipated event. Do you think there's anything like that could be going on behind the scenes, like even before the announcement or even after, just something to massively cut down the volatility, right? Because this is like one of the biggest additions to the S&P 500 ever.
Yeah. So there's, you know, I know there's a lot of funds out there or people that have specialized strategies of some type of arbitrage or front running these S&P announcements. And I think that's been going on already with Tesla, right? And that goes on with most names that get included in the S&P 500. So there's all these statistics out that, like, you know, studies done when once companies are now already announced to be included, it's sort of like already priced in from that. But all those other companies that are announced to be in the S&P 500, they're not 400 billion, they're not 1% weightings, you know, they're like 0.01% weightings or 0.05% weightings, you know, they're nothing close to as big as Tesla's 1.2%. Maybe by the time December 21st rolls around, maybe it's 1.5% or more, who knows, right? It could be, and it's just like a snowball effect. So the amount of shares, the amount of capital required to kind of, you know, sort of legally front run the S&P inclusion event, it's just so much more than I think the amount of niche players out there that do that type of thing, right? I mean, investment bank might dedicate $1 billion of assets to do it or whatever it is. It's not going to be 6 or 10 billion. You know, altogether, I think it might be a few billion or maybe 10 billion. I don't know, but it's going to be need to be 60 billion just for the index funds. And then they have, you know, obviously they must have some kind of formula for figuring out how many the benchmarked funds that are not index funds also have to buy Tesla or will buy Tesla, right? So there's nothing close in my mind that I think that these potential tactics can cover in terms of assets needed to front run it and smooth out the price action for this.
Mm-hmm. Got it. It's interesting because like, that's a clear, you know, thesis hypothesis. There's always probably a possibility that something is going on, you know, that we don't know about.
Absolutely.
It's definitely probably a risk factor, you know, that who knows, you know, maybe the big, you know, super run up is somehow, you know, the air is let out by some reason, something, you know, off market, huge, massive, you know, contracts or trades or something, you know, happening that, that people aren't aware of perhaps. So I'm curious, with your trade, so you heard the S&P 500 announcement. You're like, hey, I want to get into these 700 strike calls. And what did you do the next morning? Like, what was kind of the whole process?
Well, I was super excited that night, and it was like hard to go to sleep. But I knew, like, okay, I'm not deciding yet. I want to do these 700 strike calls, but I'm super excited. I need to get a good night's sleep, so I went to bed at a decent time. But I set my alarm to wake up a little earlier than normal, so I can kind of get my bearings, research the stock action in the morning and so forth. And so when I woke up, normally when I wake up, I might be like more conservative, right? In the first thing in the morning, like, oh, I meant you're just thinking crazy last night. Don't do that trade, you know? So, but this time when I woke up in the morning, I was like, you know, that trade does seem a little crazy, risky, but I would be, the thought that came to my mind is I would be almost irresponsible not to do it in my mind, just from what I know, you know, just to risk 5 or 10% of my assets on this trade. This is my style. This is how I do things, right? So this is as good of an opportunity as any. And instead of taking 1 or 2 years to play out like leaps do, this takes 1 or 2 months to play out. Like, it's such an obvious trade to me, you know? So I went ahead and researched the strikes. Saw the stock was trading around 450 or 460 that morning. It was going to, the option was going to open around $7 or $8, I thought, and per contract. And so my account is with Interactive Brokers. I called them and a little bit before the market opened, and I got in touch with they have a block trading desk for options trading. And so if I just was trading 100 contracts or 200 contracts, I could do it myself electronically, right? But now my account's a lot bigger, and if I'm going to trade 1,000 plus contracts, you know, that's not as easy to get filled electronically just trading, unless I'm using some fancy algo. And you know, I wanted to get some assistance from someone who's like a professional, and it's more expensive commission wise, but to me, that's such a small price compared to the importance of this trade and getting the right execution. So, they helped me. I explained the trade to them, and they helped manage the trade and filled it and gave me callbacks every 15 minutes for the 45 minutes or so it took for them to fill the whole order across my three accounts that I was doing it on. And, I got filled between like $5.50 and $7.85 in that range in the first 45 minutes of trading, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah. So, I mean, you sent me some screenshots of, you know, the trades and the accounts. So, basically you had what, 3,700, 500, right? 3,750 contracts, of the January 15, 2021, 700 strike calls, right?
That's right.
And the total seemed to work out to about around $2.7 million.
Yeah, 2.7 or 2.8, somewhere in that range.
Got it.
2.7 something.
Okay, yeah. Got it. So you spent $2.7 million on these out of the money, right? Option
deep
calls.
Out of the money.
Deep out of the money, right? Tesla's
Seems crazy. Sounds crazy.
Yeah. Tesla's like, I think it opened at around 455-ish or something. So we're talking about like massively out of the money, right? $250 bucks out of the money, and expiring in less than two months, right? So short term, you know, option calls.
There's a couple extra bonuses or positive things that talked me into this as well, like advantages to that particular strike and month, and also my personal account. I've done very well, but I have like, you know, a million or 2 million of short-term gain. So I figured, okay, if I lose this entire bet on my short-term account, it's almost half off, because then it crosses out my 1 or 2 million of short-term gains this year with the short-term loss on this trade. So it's almost less expensive to me in a little bit in that, when I think of it that way, right? And then my IRA and my fund account, I did it as well. But I thought about, because it expires January 15th and not like the last week of December, then it gives me some optionality around taxes for the personal account, the fund account, where I could sell them December 30th or 31st or whatever, or I could sell them January 1st or 2nd, or I could maybe wait until after the P&D, the purchase and delivery announcement on January 3rd or 4th or whenever it happens. You know, so there's a lot of optionality around this.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, it makes sense. All right. So I want to explain a little bit about these option calls for people, because a lot of people will understand it, a lot of people won't. So basically, these 700 strike calls are giving you the contract or the ability, the right to purchase Tesla shares at $700 on January 15th, 2021, or before that price or that date. And so you pay a premium, a contract premium, for that right to purchase those shares at that price at a later date. And that premium is basically comes out to be, with the 700 strike calls that expire January 15th, 2021, the premium was, let's call it $7 or so, right? Mm-hmm. Per share, right? But then these options, they work in contracts. Each contract basically controls 100 shares. So if you buy one contract at $7 per share, that's what, $700, right? Per contract, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So Emmett, you're making a huge bet. But in some ways it's still not like, you know, 50% of your portfolio, right?
No way. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that are, you know, reach out to me on Twitter or ever since our last conversation, like, what options should I buy now? What should I do this? And I can't really give advice. You know, all I can say is like, be very careful with options, and some people are real gamblers and want to put like, you know, might want to put like half their money in this type of trade. That's crazy to me. You know, that's really rolling the dice. You know, if you see these opportunities and you put even like 5%, that's like, to me, is really risky. That's about what I did. And it's I feel like I'm a pretty risky person, you know? So you have to be very careful with these types of trades when you kind of expect to lose it, you know?
Yeah. I think also a lot of people with options, beginners, they tend to like they get a little bit emotional in terms of how they view opportunity. They don't want to miss out. And they look at an opportunity that really isn't that special, like isn't really like once in a few year opportunity per se, but they, in their mind, they're thinking it's a great opportunity, right? And they should risk 10 or 20% or 30% of their portfolio when in actuality, the odds aren't really that great, you know?
And that's right.
But I mean, I think that's a tough thing to discern, you know, like, hey, is this really an opportunity that's like really, really special, like unique, right? That I can go in bigger with. I think in your case, you had a lot of gains this past year. You have, a lot of, taxes to pay. So if you, lose out on a trade, you have some, it's not a complete 100%, loss in that sense. So you do have some benefit. And then you're also playing with house money, kind of. I mean, in the sense that you've gained so much that, you're fine with losing a bit this year, to offset some of those gains.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like, a lot of people do fancy things with options. You know, they buy call spreads or iron condors or, all kinds of fancy names of these different types of option spreads you can do. And sometimes I think the simplest, Occam's razor, right? The simplest is just to buy a call or buy a put for what you think is going to happen. You know, it makes it simpler in your mind to kind of think about. You can, I think using options as a tool for me is most powerful when I think of it as a simple outcome like that, as opposed to trying to make it more complicated. I'm not saying doing those spreads aren't good. You can certainly do well, lock in profits with certain put spreads or vertical spreads or whatnot. But to me, I'd rather just buy and sell the stock than do that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think that matches also kind of your personality of kind of you're wanting to take some big risks and, option calls, makes sense, especially when you think it's a special opportunity. I'm curious, why didn't you spread out your strike prices? Why did you go all like 700 strike January 15th, 2021? Why didn't you do like some 600, 650, 700, 750, 800, or, just like spread it out a bit? Like what's
I thought about doing. That's a good question. And I asked the trader who's like been a market maker for, and for 10 or 20 years before he's been doing block trades for Interactive Brokers for the last 10 plus years, so he knows the options market better than anyone that I know. And so I'd asked him, towards the end, like, should I have done this in multiple strikes instead of just all the 700 strike? He's like, no. He's like, if you had started putting fills in for, hundreds of contracts at different strikes, then, the market makers on the other side get wind of that and they start raising implied volatility quickly because they think there's a really big buyer. So just doing the one strike is the way to do it if you're going to buy a lot of contracts. But try to hide your order as best you can. He did some kind of like fancy hidden midpoint orders or something. The best he knew how to do to get the fills without revealing the size.
Got it. Interesting stuff. So when you put on like this trade, are you prepared to lose the entire amount if the trade goes against you? Or do you have some type of stop loss, some type of point where like I'll pull it at some certain point if it goes, below this price or the options like sink, half or 75%, I'm just going to pull save some money? Or are you kind of like, I'm just going to let it ride? What's your kind of approach?
Yeah, it's more the let it ride. I mean, I looked the couple of days after I did the trade, the rest of that day didn't go so well for me with the options. I think they went down to like $5 or something, even though I got filled around $7. But then the next couple of days, the stock went up and the options at the highest point were like 19. So I already like tripled my money in like 2 days. I could have pulled it, right? But in my mind, this is a trade for 20x plus, And so I'm kind of waiting. The good stuff hasn't even happened yet in my mind, and the stock's come back down a little bit. The implied volatility came back down. I think it's like $11 or $12 a contract right now as of Friday, this close. But in my mind, when I've done these types of trades in the past, occasionally, if it starts running up really fast, like faster than I anticipate, and it gets to like, you know, a 10x plus return in a few weeks, then I might pull like a quarter of it just to keep my money, make my money back of what I invested plus some profits, you know, and let this other 75% ride from there, you know. Because so I've done this type of trade in the past occasionally, like way back with Apple. I remember I did it, you know, a much smaller scale, like for 5 or 10 contracts on my personal account at the time. And I made like 10x and I was letting it ride, but then Apple corrected and went back down and ended up expiring worthless. And I was like, oh man, I could have just sold it the 10x. And so I remember those painful moments. And so if it does go up faster than I anticipate, I might close out like a quarter of it or up to half of it, but probably not even half, probably a quarter of it, just to get some money off the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. Like I remember the first day after S&P inclusion, I think Tuesday, the stock opened up around 455-ish. And then, you know, it seemed like it could just go up, but then it just took the opposite move, right? It went down. I think it closed, what, under 440 or so. Like your options, you know, they probably looked like pretty...
they looked like sinker at that time.
Yeah, they looked pretty probably messed up. I mean, your $7 premium is down to $5 or maybe even less. I mean, were you doubting? Like, were you kind of...
No, I was not doubting. I was like, man, this is just the beginning. Like, there's a whole like month and a half left of buying that needs to happen. You know, the index funds haven't even begun to buy yet. You know, they have to wait until like December, I think, to start even buying. So it's just, there's a lot of fun left in this trade in my mind. And so I'm excited to kind of see how it plays out.
Really?
So
what happened? What would have happened if you're like, okay, the next day it goes lower? We end this week.
I might have bought more. I had more. Really? I didn't buy as many as I really wanted to. I was tempted to buy, like the night when I went to sleep, I was going to buy 5,000 and I only bought 3,000. So I was like, man, if this price, I thought about it and I was like, if the price goes down a lot more the next few days, like before December, I'm going to buy like another maybe one or 2,000, like really cheap and see, you know.
I see.
But, I wouldn't have done more because I don't want to lose a lot.
So like, it's interesting because that first day, I would imagine like you probably could have lost up to $1 million, you know, like
on paper. If I closed it all out right then.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But that's not phasing you, I guess. Right?
It used to phase me, but now I think of it, I have to think of it differently. Like, you know, I have to think of it as a percentage of my account. Like in the past, it might have been $10,000 or $20,000 out of my $200,000 account I'd be losing. And that'd be, you know, a little painful, but it's not the end of the world. Now I'm like, okay, I'm still losing 5 or 8% worst case. You know, it's not the end of the world. And I have these taxes that'll offset with it, which is a nice, it's like a perfect storm for me in a way. If I didn't have those taxes to offset it with, I might have just done it in my IRA account and just a small amount in my fund account, for example, you know, just because the IRA account, if it turns into like a 20 bagger, then I don't have to pay taxes on it, which is great, you know?
Yeah. I noticed personally for me, it's like I'm kind of struggling through this one issue where, I'm trying to look at things more in percent of my, you know, account or portfolio type of net worth type asset worth, but it's extremely difficult sometimes to do that because like, you know, I'm like researching a new company or something or investment opportunity. And like the money I put in seems like a significant amount of money. Like, you know, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of money. But then when I look at it, like percentage wise, it's like, it's not a lot. So I'm kind of like struggling in my own head where it's like, I haven't fully transitioned to be able to invest just purely off of percent of my, you know, net worth assets or portfolio. How did you make that jump? I'm just curious.
I haven't fully made it, to be honest. For this trade, I made that jump. It was a leap, you know, and, but for a lot of trades, I'm in the same boat as you. I think like, okay. And I don't do a whole lot of other trade, you know, in my fund, the fund I'm trying to diversify and do lots of different things and different names, which is good. And it's a good practice for me and it's going pretty well, but my personal account and the IRA account, it's so highly concentrated Tesla. It's like, I'm not ready to close my Tesla shares to like free up money for a new name or something like that, you know? So when I do trade other trades, it's often just a smaller amount because that's what's available to me, or I don't want to close a whole bunch of Tesla stock positions to put too much in something else.
Got it. If Tesla does do kind of this scenario of a super run up, Will you sell like some or most of your, let's say, long-term kind of Tesla shares or your long-term dated, you know, options?
Yeah. If it runs up that much, I've thought about it, and I'll probably just sell these short-term options, most of them. And if it's really high, maybe I can exercise some port, like 20% of them, to just take shares and hold more shares long-term, whatever, however high it goes, you know. But I don't want to have a margin balance exercising too much of it, obviously. And I just realized, like, okay, if it goes up that like as much as I think, I'm just going to resign myself to pay the all in short-term gains tax with California and Fed, and just pay it for this trade, you know. But you know, I did a lot in my IRA account, and so that I won't have to pay that penalty there, obviously. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So you likely will keep most of your long-term holdings regardless, even if it runs up. Like, if it goes to like 1,000, will you still keep your long-term holdings?
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep, I might sell a tiny portion just to pay whatever taxes I owe, you know, if I have to pay more taxes, even after selling the short-term for whatever reason. But other than that, I'm going to hold it and sell covered calls against it, like deep out of the money. Like if it goes to 1,000, I'll start selling like 2,000 or 1,500 or something over that covered calls that are only like 2 weeks out for like $1 or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, a couple dollars, just enough to like as a salary to myself mm-hmm. to live on comfortably, yeah. you know, while I figure out what I'm going to do next mm-hmm. with that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. So we need to make a few kind of disclaimers or warnings. Like first, yeah. some of these things we're talking about, they're just like scenarios that by no means like are guaranteed or and I'll be clear, like this whole 20% of a possibility of Tesla, let's say, doing a super run up to 800 or more, to me it seems a little bit high, that percent, just because like I know Tesla is like, they do have, there's limited shares, and there's a ton of demand. But then on the flip side, I do think there's some liquidity. There's a decent amount of liquidity where, because it's such a big, large cap company, I don't think there's actually like a ton of diehard Tesla shareholders in terms of percent of the total float. Meaning like, I think because of the run-up and there's been so many new buyers and institutions and funds have gotten into Tesla, I feel like a lot of them would kind of maybe exit at a certain point. The hardcore kind of believers, like, you know, I'm holding this to the end, like those are mostly, I think, retailers, and they don't make up a very large percent of the float. And then there are some institutions with those type of diehard believers, but I don't think they're that many actually, you know, like even Cathie Wood's ARK Invest, they will sell as it goes up to keep their 10% or so holding. They're not really like the buy and hold forever types, you know, and I don't think there's that many of them actually. So I don't know, personally, I think the 20% super run up scenario might be a little bit high. I don't know, you know, this is,
it could be, yeah, it could be very, it could be high. Opinion. Yeah. I mean, but the way the options were priced, it was like a 5% chance. And I was like, it's got to be higher than 5%. Like, I think it's 20, 25, but maybe it is less than 20. And like I said, I could be wrong. This is kind of my own gut decision.
Sure.
You know, I've lost money many times on this type of trade in my career. So it's very possible that I'm very wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. And another disclaimer or kind of warning for folks is that, your trade, Emmett's trade, is, there's a decent possibility he loses all of it. Like, you know, if you don't sell at the right time. And the whole thing about time premium decay. So we have this thing, is this thing is just like the S&P inclusion is just what, like a month out, and your January 15, 2021 calls are less than 2 months out. Trading days wise, it's like, you know, less than that, less than 2 months, obviously, in trading days. So every day, every trading day that passes, because these are out of the money calls, you have a pretty massive premium decay. I mean, imagine like a week later. Okay, so your 700 strike calls are, let's say, about between $11 and $12 right now, right? So let's say in a week, the stock price is the same exact stock price as it closed on Friday. So let's say 490, right? Yeah. So you have a week of time premium decay. Have you thought about like what the premium options will be at that time? Like, do you have any guess in terms of what it could be?
I would guess it'll lose, you know, $2 or $3 in value. I haven't looked at the actual, it's called the theta, the time value, but they have that stat on the Interactive Brokers platform. And I do look at it sometimes, but my guess is that it would be closer to $8 per contract if the stock was the same, maybe even less if implied volatility was taken out of the stock price too. That's another part of the stock.
So, I mean, your bet only works if it really is moving up pretty
fast.
Right. Like even if it moves up slowly, it's still, your bet could be working against you. You know,
it could move up to $650 or $680 and then I could lose all of it still. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's a very risky bet. Yeah, you're right. It's, but also if it goes up to, it's because most of my own wet worth is in Tesla already, right? If it goes up to 600 or 650, then I've counteracted the loss with gains in the shares I own, the long-term leaps that are deep in the money that I own.
Mm, got it. And another kind of disclaimer warning, just, I think this is a great, you know, like for me, I love just talking about this stuff because I could dive into, for example, your head, your thoughts. We can discuss the risks, but also the potential, you know, outcomes, benefits, et cetera. I think it could be helpful for other people just to kind of like think through, you know, some possibilities, right? Another kind of, I guess, disclaimer or warning is your financial situation is probably different than a lot of others or most others, meaning like, sure, you could lose the entire $2.7 million that you put into this, but you've like already made 40 or 50 million, right, this past year. And you've already diversified somewhat in terms of like you pulled money into $3 million in SpaceX, pulled money into a house, et cetera.
Yeah.
So your financial like situation, even if Tesla goes down to, let's say, $200 per share, you know, for some reason, and you lose all of this option trade and you lose like half of...
It'd be heartbreaking, but I'd still survive.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd still survive well.
Yeah. So your financial situation is a little different, meaning like the risks you're taking is not really changing like your immediate needs, you know, or financial needs. Like your family isn't going to change their standard of living per se if you, like the trade or something goes bad, right? I think like for some people, like it's easy to do some option trades, some big risks where it does materially change, like, you know, like how they live, right? And it could be like a stressful situation, I think, for some people.
Yeah. And if you remember, I don't know, in our last conversation, we were talking about that, how I had a good job for a long time that I just resigned from a month ago. But up until then, it was a great job that paid very well. And it had its own retirement plan. And so the money I was trading Tesla, doing these Tesla things with or strategies with, was like a complete separate pool of money that I knew I could lose and be perfectly fine, still work till and retire by the time I'm 50 or 60 with the other job, you know. So this pool of money for this Tesla strategy stuff I'm doing has always been kind of compartmentalized as like house money, so to speak, right? That I could lose and still have a comfortable life with my full-time job and career I was working on.
Mm-hmm. Got it. What do you say to like the idea of like, why don't you just stop for, you know, a few years, just take it easy, cash out and just kind of like, you know, reevaluate, just like, you know, some person might say, hey, just, you know, stop while you're ahead. What motivates you to continue to take big risks, right? And do you think that will stop at some time where you'll be like, hey, maybe, you know, I don't want to, or I don't need to take as big risks?
Yeah. You know, I like to kind of, I've always been so interested in the future and what the future holds, you know, with technology in particular or emerging trends. You know, what's the difference between a fad and is something a fad or is it a trend that's going to take off long term? So I've kind of been able to merge that fascination with investing, and it's paid good dividends this last, you know, 10 years or so, especially. So, I mean, I have this kind of skill set that seems to be doing well right now, and I've thought about it your exact question in this last year, I thought deeply about it. Like when I lost interest in starting a hedge fund and had enough money where I could just, I thought about just retiring and starting a restaurant, like a restaurant or a couple restaurants, like keto-based restaurants or something, you know? And I sort of almost went that direction, but I was like, you know, I still think I can do this hedge fund thing and I might regret not ever trying it. But then I, you know, decided, okay, maybe if I can do it, I'll do it for good and do the charity aspect to it. And so that's where I have that hedge fund. And if this continues to go well, I'll get potentially some big investors into that fund and have half the fees go to charity and maybe set some kind of example for other investment managers to do something similar and maybe kick off a whole new trend like ESG. And even if my fund fails later, at least I might have kicked off some trend like ESG, but for charitable giving, which would be great, you know, since capitalism is sort of, I see that it's sort of at risk with the younger generations, mm-hmm. the whole idea of capitalism, but maybe this can help change that perception potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if it took off, best case. So that's sort of what drives me to keep doing it is deep down, I want to change, you know, the road ahead for our economic system to not be socialist, but to be more capitalist, but with, you know, common sense involved, obviously, and good giving back.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Makes sense. Last kind of warning for folks is please do not do what, you know, Emmett does just because yeah. you are highly impressionable and you don't know what you're doing yeah. and you just like, you know, want to follow. What would you suggest to people who are like, they listen to something like this or your first interview with me and they're like, wow, where do I get started? Like
yeah.
maybe they're a little bit more cautious. Let's say you're talking to more level-headed people who are like, you know, this sounds interesting. And I don't want to just go ahead and just randomly gamble all my savings away, but, is there a way to kind of, you know, dip my toes or, you know, get some learning under my belt? What would you say to those folks?
Yeah. So it's funny you say that since our last conversation and even this last couple months since I left my job and talked to friends and family that I left or they found out about it, a lot of people are saying, oh, I want to invest in your fund, you know, and this and that. I definitely do not want to take like individual investors' capital in this type of strategy. It's very high risk, right? And so for all these people, I tell them like, listen, my highest conviction name by far is Tesla. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. If you're committed to long term, just buy and hold Tesla. That's what I would say, you know, not all your money, but, you know, that could be a high weighting of your portfolio, in my opinion, if you want good returns for years to come. So that's kind of what I tell people as a safe thing. And I also tell people the most successful investors I've seen, like I've seen so many different investment strategies in my job being in sales for all kinds of hedge funds, you know, all different types of strategies that they tell me about they're doing and such. And most people's strategies do not beat the market, you know, and a lot of them lose a lot of money over the long term. But the most successful ones are buy and hold investors. You know, that's sometimes the hardest thing to do is if you buy Tesla and you just have to sit on it throughout all of all, when it goes up $1,000 or $500, like, oh, what should I do now? What should I do? I want to sell it or no, just hold it. You know, like, or if it goes down $200, what should I do? Just hold it. You know, long-term it's going to be fine. The people that try to actively trade typically lose a lot of money in the long run. And, it's addictive because if you do it a few times, you make a little bit of money. It seems like, oh, that's, I can keep doing that. And you feel like you need to do something when the markets are moving or, you know, but the hardest thing sometimes is just sitting and not doing anything mm-hmm. and just stay invested in your beliefs with the companies you're invested in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, definitely interesting. I think like there are definitely like, different paths to choose. And I would say like in some ways, like not one path is better than the other. Like a lot of it depends on the person, the personality, their skills and abilities. Like you're choosing and have found success in a little bit more kind of like you combine a long-term investing approach because most of your portfolio is still in Tesla long-term shares and long-term yeah. dated in the money, right? Deep in the money mm-hmm. calls. And so you pair that together with kind of these more high risk, big risk, big reward type of opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And that kind of matches your personality set and kind of you're able to handle the emotional ups and downs. I think most people, when they like, they make the trade, like you did on Tuesday morning, putting 2.7 million, you drop a million or something, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how most people would handle that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just emotionally yeah. and psychologically, you're just like, oh my gosh, I made this huge mistake. I guess it helps by saying, hey, it's just, you know, a few percent, right? Five, like,
yeah.
Actually, it was more than 5%, so 5 to 10%. Actually, that's a decent amount.
It was like
actually,
8, 7, or 8%. Yeah, it was a good amount. Yeah, I mean, I just felt like this was the last big gift in my mind. It felt like a gift, but I know I'm just overly zealous on Tesla's and this potential scenario. But something just told me like this could be your last big opportunity for a huge win. You know, Tesla's already so big; it's not going to 10x in price anytime soon. It might double, and this could double in a month. And this could be the window, you know. So in order to take advantage, do this option trade. That's sort of what I was thinking.
Another thing, Emmett, your thoughts and your actions could change day to day, right? So who knows what will happen? It could be like this week you cash out for some reason.
That's
So
true.
yeah, so in this sense, everything that I share on my channel is more of a stream of consciousness. It's real time thoughts that change day
Yeah.
to day in situations. So don't take what Emmett says here as like this, you know, ultimate truth of how to trade or invest over the next
Yeah,
month. You
this
know,
is
this
not
is all
investment
changing.
advice in any
Exactly.
way. It's just everyone should come up with their own models of trading and decide for themselves. This is just my experience of what
Exactly.
I've done. These options trades are especially risky because if the entire stock market's, you know, going through some correction, then all these bullish call bets I'm making, anytime you have this type of trade on, you're probably going to lose it all, right? So if in the next, luckily this is a shorter term one, but if it was a longer term out of the money, deep out of the money call option especially, then you know, if all of a sudden we go into some kind of scare where the market's tanking 10 or 20% for whatever reason, you know, then your call op, you know, pretty much all stocks are going down, including Tesla, and your call options are much more likely to become worthless. So, yeah, it depends. You know, a lot of these option trades, like the one we talked about, is dependent on the market staying stable or continuing to go up for the next 1 or 2 months, too, which is another, you know, factor to think about.
Yeah, I want to actually talk to you about risk a little bit, especially with macro events. And I think a lot of people, they kind of discount the possibility that macro conditions can suddenly change. And they kind of like, you know, I think especially new investors tend to be overly optimistic in terms of the predictability of the markets, or kind of this whole idea that everything goes up and keeps on going up. The fear of missing out, right? Just kind of being emotional and scared to not be part of it. But I think and I think it goes two ways. So one, if you're doing the short-term options, you're especially vulnerable to unexpected events, right? Because if something happens, like there's an event in the world, or it doesn't even have to be an event. It could be like a coordinated media campaign, you know, on some issue or something that kind of like messes, you know, the bigger kind of optimism in the market for a few weeks or a few
Or it
months,
could
right?
be like Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, just saying something about like signaling something that's interpreted as interest rates not staying this low for that long.
Exactly, right? Yeah, just like some small thing, and it just triggers these like whole series of different, you know, people making different comments and changes the whole mood of the whole, you know, stock market or in these investors. And then you have like, you know, it could be a few months, it could be drawn out, you know, some type of bear market or correction. And if you're in short-term options, then it's like, wow, you just like, I mean,
Just
pain.
bombed and lost it all. Yeah, if you're long short-term call options. If you're short-term put options, then maybe you just made money. But you know, most of your listeners are probably not buying put options on stuff. Maybe some.
And so, I mean, that's definitely a concern. Another concern that I think, even with holding long term, I think, you know, there's this huge argument that you have low interest rates, you don't have a lot of other options with investments. Equities are kind of like the go-to place. You have COVID, and a lot of these stocks and companies have weathered the storm, proven their resilience. So you have a lot of just buy-in from the whole market on the potential of these companies and the valuation which of these companies, which have, you know, gone up and skyrocketed for some companies. And you don't think that things could change, you know, you think that this is all set and solid. But when I hear that often sometimes, like, because I hear, like, I watch some stuff, I read some stuff, and they're like, yeah, this is going to go on for many, many years, right? Low interest rates and just high valuations. And, you know, you could say like, hey, yeah, if the interest rate of like 1 or 2%, like, you know, look at the multiples investors will have to give. You have to give higher multiples, right? Because the interest rates are lower. And I look at that, and I look at it less binary, because I think a lot of people, they look at it black and white. It's either going to be like this or not. I look at it more blended, or kind of all, it's like all about probabilities, you know? Like nothing is 100% about the future. And oftentimes when people talk like it's 100%, it's really not 100%. Like it's actually higher risk than they make it to be. And that's where, you know, I think it's something to consider. It's difficult to plan for though, you know, because you don't want to be scared completely out of the market, you know, where you're like, oh my gosh, like everything's so high that I'm not going to invest. But on the other hand, you don't want to have this overinflated enthusiasm and overconfidence that everything is just like,
especially on like growth stocks, like, you know, all these stocks that are going, you know, including Tesla, obviously, but, you know, all these other internet software as a service company stocks that are just going up ridiculously, you know, like I agree that something can change on the macro environment to cut them all in half pretty quickly and then stay there. You know, we just don't know when that'll happen. It'll happen at some point, but we don't know when. It could be at the end of the decade. It could be this year, next year. You just don't know when, but at some point, there's going to be some major kind of correction, and it might go up another factor of multiples to even higher before that happens. I don't know, but it could happen tomorrow too.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is like, if you're invested in a company that you really know well, and you really think is like revolutionary, growing into huge markets and still early on, then you can count on that counteracting kind of like volatility and let's say even a prolonged, you know, bear market or something. Like you're betting more on what a company can do regardless of the macro environment. Like to me, that it feels like a little bit more of a solid bet than like betting on the entire market or companies that you don't really know about that much, you know, and you just hear about from other people.
Yeah, no, that's why I think me and you, and I think most smart investors, you know, as bullish investors on Tesla, for example, are holding most of our shares long, most of our Tesla exposure and just shares held long term, right? Because you know, if there's huge market volatility swings, then the options could be turned to nothing. But your stock still means something, right? Because theoretically, the value of the stock should be the value of all the dividends it gives out in the future, discounted back to present day. So I think you and I both believe that Tesla is going to grow to a point where it can start giving dividends and eventually immense dividends relative to the size of its business now. And so if we just can hold on to it until then, we're going to be made, you know, men getting huge dividend checks from Tesla, similar to how people are getting big dividend checks from Apple now that bought it 15 years ago and held, right?
I'll go ahead and link to Emmett's Twitter account in the video description. He's been tweeting out some pretty interesting stuff that I've been following as well. And also your fund site as well. It's Good Soil Investments, right?
GoodSoilInvestment.com. Okay. I think it's without the S. Yeah, GoodSoilInvestment.com. Yeah.
All right. Good luck, man. And we'll chat and talk to you later.
Thanks, Dave. Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. I hope that conversation was helpful. As with all of my videos, it's a stream of consciousness where I'm sharing my thoughts and also I'm trying to get into the minds of some other people that I interview. And I hope that going into some of the reasonings and some of the logic behind some of their decisions is helpful. I know it was very helpful for me. If this video has been helpful, please like it and consider subscribing to my channel. I've got some great interviews ahead, and I've also got some great company analysis videos planned in the coming weeks. All my YouTube videos are also available as an audio podcast. Just search for Dave Lee on Investing in your favorite podcast player. And I'm also on Twitter, where I'm actively engaging with people there, and my handle is HeyDave7. We'll see you in my next video. Thanks.